Well, I appreciate being here, and I appreciate your coming, but I'm sure I'm not the right person to respond to Gideon's paper. I don't know the paper well enough yet, nor have I read Wayne Booth's Company We Keep, and quite frankly, I've not seen either Saturday's Warrior or The Last Temptation of Christ. But I suppose I am qualified to make comments, which, thank goodness, is all that the printed program requires of me. For almost 20 years now, I've heard people quote that part of the 13th Article of Faith that says, if there's anything virtuous, lovely, or of good report, or praiseworthy, we seek after these things. But I've never once heard anyone in the church quote the admonition of Paul upon which this phrase is based. Indeed, since joining the church, I've heard precious little of anything Paul said. And that bothers me. Here's the admonition of Paul. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. I believe this list is in the right order. A person should start with truth, honesty, justice, and purity, and only then proceed to the others. And I think the verb is better than Joseph Smith's. We shouldn't just seek after these things, we should think on them. That's part of what Gideon is saying in his paper, that making good reports means being truthful, honest, fair, and thoughtful. And he's done that himself, even admitting to being moved by that guiltiest of guilty pleasures among some Mormons, Saturday's Warrior. I agree with the spirit of his comments on that show. As I say, I never saw it, but I know enough about it to co-opt Marianne Moore's observation about poetry and say of Saturday's Warrior, I too dislike it. There are things that are important beyond all this fiddle. Reading it, however, with a perfect contempt for it, one discovers in it, after all, a place for the genuine. Gideon's recollections of Saturday's Warrior actually took me back to a happier time in the church when the words of people other than general authorities actually got quoted at the pulpit. True, I hated that some people used the show as a basis for their testimony until I got older and saw some of the alternatives. Looking back, I believe that the success of Saturday's Warrior didn't have much to do with its craftsmanship, and certainly not with its doctrine. That vision of premortal relationships, or what I call pre-existentialism, was already 100 years old in the church. Now, with Saturday's Warrior, the medium was the message. Pop music settings of old doctrine signaled the triumph of youth values in the post-Harold B. Lee church. Its success was both a call to arms for Mormon juvenilia and the death knell to the old days, you know, those days when Mormon parents liked foxtrotting and hated cosmetic surgery. When Gideon raises the matter of the last temptation of Christ, however, he takes me back to a slightly earlier time, when many of my born-again Christian friends in high school debated whether one ought to read Kazantzakis' book. Yes, it was a book long before it was a movie, and we went through the same sort of discussions about whether one could derive anything good from such sacrilege, however elegantly rendered it might be. Didn't it portray Christ as, in fact, a sinner? Of course, the answer depended partly on whether you considered certain kinds of thoughts to be temptations or sins. I frankly don't know which they are, but I take comfort in this pithy saying by Joseph Smith, much of what is called sin is not sin. But I'm troubled when Gideon neither recommends that you see the film of Last Temptation of Christ, nor that you avoid it, because he, quote, will not presume that my good is yours, nor yours mine, end quote. It does seem that his aesthetics, like some people's ethics, is purely situational. Among the works of art to which he refers, the only one I'm sure he does not recommend is the disco cassette of Saturday's Warrior, although for my money it sounds like the most interesting specimen of the lot. On the other hand, by bearing testimony, that's his phrase, of the good he and his friend found in Last Temptation, he is in fact recommending it, except that I think he's trying to evade the responsibility of doing so. But like faith without works, criticism without accountability is dead. Imagine that instead of pleading for all Israel to enter Canaan, Joshua and Caleb had simply said, "We won't presume to tell you whether to enter a retreat because everyone will experience the place differently." Their refusal to point the way would reduce them from scouts to tourists. Gideon plays it pretty safe, I'd say, with his case studies in edification, choosing two works of theater that explicitly intend to celebrate Jesus and the gospel. What I want to know is, how should we handle all those other movies and plays that have no overt reference to Christ and often revel in human darkness? Can, say, The Silence of the Lambs be a source of edification to a Latter-day Saint? Again, I haven't seen it. Or, to broaden the question, can a work of fiction edify merely through its technical excellence? Or might that excellence simply be an elegant mask to cover moral ugliness? This leads to other questions. Is it possible to make moralistic judgments that are not, quote-unquote, sweeping, by which I suppose Gideon means bad? How does prophetic counsel affect what we choose to see? And how does the act of simply going to see a particular movie affect people around us, regardless of how we report our experience? Gideon has a vision of the individual mind and heart seeking out lovely things, of the soul opening, in his words, broadly to the whole of humankind, its history and accomplishments. The statement by Joseph Smith, you know, about searching into and contemplating the darkest abyss, and so on, that seems to confirm his vision. And several statements by Paul even suggest that the search for goodness should remain wide open. These are from Paul. "Nothing is unclean of itself," he says. "We should prove or try all things, because all things work together for good to them that love God and are called according to his purpose." But I think the premise of the word of wisdom is relevant here. The idea that some food can enliven our taste buds and even be helpful in some sense and still be essentially poisonous. Take fruit. Probably all fruit is good, but some fruit is forbidden. As Brigham Young would tell you, the apples in the garden were metaphysically acidic, full of spiritually and bodily corrosive elements. I suspect the same is true with art. All of it is nourishing, but some of it is toxic. So the mere promise of nourishment does not justify ingesting everything in sight. Joshua and Caleb were correct. Israel would have beat down the giants, and God would have given the people the land. Note what they said. "The land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us." But what if God had not given them the land? What if the scouts had advised entry simply out of a confidence in their own personal capacity to do battle with giants? And then what if people followed them? There have been plenty of scouts whose names we don't remember who said to invade a territory when it wasn't, in fact, safe to do so. And people can die when a scout gives a good report that isn't true. What I'm trying to say is that there are probably movies and plays we should avoid simply because the giants who inhabit them aren't worth facing, no matter how much milk and honey is on their shelves. And while God has promised us Zion, he hasn't promised everything else. When Gideon says that works of art are like friends, I think of a conversation I had years ago. In Sam Taylor's biography of John Taylor, I'd come upon a remark in a letter by John Whitaker, who was attempting to become Taylor's son-in-law. Whitaker said, "Wherever I've labored, I have sought the associations of the good, the just, and the noble, but my truest and best companions have I found in reading books. I liked that statement. Seemed like my own experience. So I showed it to a friend, and she was horrified. How could anyone, she asked me, put a good book above a good person? A work of art, she let me know, no matter how lovely or praiseworthy or of good report, is no substitute for a human being. I thought about what she said through the years, and I pretty much decided that if art and people are the company we keep, one is more important than the other. We don't owe them both the same loyalty. When it comes to friends, books or plays or movies are no match for real, living, breathing, thinking, feeling people. When our loyalties get divided, as they sometimes must, we ought to resolve them in the right direction, even when the pursuit of beautiful, artistic, spiritual experience is in the breach. I think Gideon would agree with that. Incidentally, it was the Apostle Paul who indirectly gave the best counsel.